On April 14th in 1561, a broadsheet news article was printed and circulated reporting an event that had taken place in the skies over the city of Nuremberg before dawn. The broadsheet featured a woodcut engraving illustrating the celestial phenomenon over the city that many who lived in the city and outside of the gates had witnessed. We believe the woodcut may have been produced either using a stencil system to lay down the different colors, but it may have been a set of carved wood blocks aligned and printed. The woodcut engraving and text were created by Hans Wolf Glosser.
Hog the gates, everybody. As we kick off season 2, we want to wish you all the best in the coming new year, and thank you for joining us on our journey of learning about the spooky, spine-tingling, and hard-to-believe tales found in the world of art history. Today, we're talking about a couple of incidents that happened in the skies above Germany and Switzerland. These were recorded in woodblock carved prints in the 1500s.
From Tim Mara's Artist's Alphabet, here's a quote. I like to print each bit in its own right. The thing about printing, as opposed to printmaking, is that people will use the same color in several areas to save themselves a couple of printings. I treat everything as if I were painting it. The same color could actually be used twice, but I don't know that as I go along. I don't know that until it's finished.
Here is the report Hans shares in the broadsheet. In the morning of April 14th, 1561, at daybreak, between 4 and 5 a.m., a dreadful apparition occurred on the sun. And then this was seen in Nuremberg, in the city, before the gates, and in the country, by many men and women. At first, there appeared in the middle of the sun two blood-red semicircular arcs, just like the moon in its last quarter. And in the sun, above and below on both sides, the color was blood. There stood a round ball of partly dull, partly black, ferrous color. Likewise, there stood on both sides, and as a torus about the sun, such blood-red ones and other balls in large number, about three in a line and four in a square, also some alone. In between these globes there were visible a few blood-red crosses, between which there were blood-red strips, becoming thicker to the rear and in the front, malleable like the rods of reed grass, which were intermingled among them two big rods, one on the right, the other to the left. And within the small and big rods there were three, also four and more globes. These all started to fight among themselves, so that the globes, which were first in the sun, flew out to the ones standing on both sides. Thereafter, the globes standing outside the sun, in the small and large rods, flew into the sun. Besides, the globes flew back and forth among themselves, and fought vehemently with each other for over an hour. And when the conflict in and again out of the sun was most intense, they became fatigued to such an extent that they all, as said above, fell from the sun down upon the earth, as if they all burned, and they then wasted away on the earth with immense smoke. After all this, there was something like a black spear, very long and thick-sided. The shaft pointed to the east, the point pointed to the west. Whatever such signs mean, God alone knows. Although we have seen shortly one after another, many kinds of signs on the heaven, which are sent to us by the Almighty God to bring us to repentance. We still are, unfortunately, so ungrateful that we despise such high signs and miracles of God, or we speak of them with ridicule and discard them to the wind, in order that God may send us a frightening punishment on account of our ungratefulness. After all, the God-fearing will by no means discard these signs, but will take it to heart as a warning of their merciful Father in heaven, will mend their lives, and faithfully beg God that he may avert his wrath, including the well-deserved punishment on us, so that we may temporarily here and perpetually there live as his children. For it may God grant us his help. Amen. By Hans Glasser, letter painter of Nuremberg. Hans Wolf Glasser lived from 1500 to June 1573. And this information was referenced from Wikipedia's listing.
The broadsheet measures 10.3 inches by 15 inches and can be found in the archive at the Zittro Bibliothek, the city library in Zurich, Switzerland. Join us as we discuss the tinted woodcut and event it captured, not to mention a similar sighting a few years later in Switzerland.
So the German Renaissance happened in the 15th and 16th century, and it came out of Italian Renaissance. Included architecture. There's still a town hall at Augsburg and Steidelberg Castle. And I'm bringing Augsburg into this. It was founded in 15 BC because there seemed to be a lot of religious agreements going on around that time with a treaty between Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, and the Schmalkaldic League that was signed in 1555. This allowed princes in the area to choose their religion between the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church. At the time, if you were living in the area of a prince that was not of your picked religion, it was agreed upon by the princes that you could pack up your family and move to another area where the prince was the same religion as you were and you wouldn't be hassled when you did it. In 1532, in Nuremberg, a religious peace was signed, and this was to prevent war with Protestants and Catholics. So it seemed like there was a lot of stuff going on in the name of religion and Christianity, which kind of, as is similar today, it seems like a lot of stuff is done in the name of Christianity that isn't maybe fundamental to that religion. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to talk a little bit about Nuremberg, which is where the celestial phenomenon occurred over. Some of the things about the area, the Schönerbrunnen, a beautiful fountain, is original and could be seen still if you went there. And Johannes Friedhof is a medieval cemetery. And one of the musicians that came a little later than this whole event was Johann Pachelbel, born in 1653. You may have heard the Canon in D. The possibility of these kinds of things, like when you hear about the vision of the Virgin in France, mm-hmm. People thought it was kind of like a mass hallucination or a group hallucination.
Yeah.
So that I know some people might consider that as an explanation. I know you were going to look up possible celestial events, like scientific, that might have caused some of this. What kind of stuff were you able to?
I wasn't able to find much of anything besides this, because Googling anything celestial with, like, the 1500s brings up this in multitudes.
If you want to listen to a good podcast on this, you could check out Celestial Sightings. The podcast is Extraterrestrial, and the podcast about this sighting in 1561 was covered by them in episode 42 called Celestial Sightings. And they give information about how it might have been talked about as a religious piece or maybe spin doctored, or they also give a few ideas about what the science could have been behind what people were seeing.
I was just going to mention that one of the other possible explanations for this was sundogs. So I just wanted to cover like the definition of a sundog, because I don't see this as being a plausible explanation for basically what the broadsheet was printed with and how it said it was like a battle in the sky. Like, that just doesn't fit. So here's the definition of a sundog from Wikipedia. A sundog is a concentrated patch of sunlight, occasionally seen about 22 degrees to the left or right of the sun. As with sundogs, hexagonal ice crystals suspended in cirrostratus clouds refract sunlight to create the halo, sometimes also called an ice bow, nimbus, or gloriole. So it's really just kind of like a halo effect, so it wouldn't have produced the type of image and event that people were seeing.
earthsky.org/astronomy-essentials/spring-is-fireball-season, I think says it all. It's a time to watch for spring fireballs, posted by Deborah Bird on February 13th of 2019. So this is an interesting thing to note, that the next major meteor shower won't come until April with the Lyrids. But if you watch, especially if you're under dark skies, you might spot a fireball, or especially bright meteor, from now through April. These are the legendary spring fireballs. In his meteor activity outlook for February 2 through 8, 2019, Robert Lunsford of the American Meteor Society, AMS, wrote, "A bright fireball may light up the sky. February is the start of the evening fireball season, when an abundance of fireballs seems to occur. This lasts well into April. As seen from the Northern Hemisphere, sporadic rates are near maximum for those viewing from the Southern Hemisphere. There are no strong showers this month, but sporadic rates are well in excess of 10 per hour, as seen from mid-southern latitudes." NASA meteor expert Bill Cook got us all hooked on spring fireballs, beginning in 2011 when he reported, "Spring is fireball season. For reasons we don't understand, the rate of bright meteors climbs during the weeks around the vernal equinox." What's the name of the Arizona crater? Do you know?
No.
Okay, the Beringer Meteor Crater is a giant crater located in Arizona, and it's east of Flagstaff. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, no.
Okay, let me send you a... The crater is nearly 570 feet deep, and it was created 49,000 years ago. This shows you what a meteor can do. As you look at the print on the broadsheet, going back there myself... Okay, if you look at the woodcut, you see the smoke down on the lower right corner and a bunch of circles surrounding it and balls of light. I would think it's possible that it could have been a meteor shower, but then again, that doesn't explain the pointy thing at the bottom and the columns, or whatever you want to call them, that are just hanging out in the sky. So, yeah. And it sounded like a lot of people had seen this, so I don't know that he would have taken total creative license with it.
No, I don't know. It does seem like this would have been a lot to kind of fabricate. But I know that the other podcast that you mentioned said that Hans Glasser was kind of like the National Enquirer. So, I mean, maybe if he was taking that approach, you know, like I saw a headline at the grocery store yesterday that said, you know, Prince Charles is dying and then he has months to live. You know, it's just kind of, I don't know, I could see it being something like that as well, that people would know, like, this is more of like an entertainment source than like credible news.
Yeah, and I'm not sure the literacy rate in the 1500s or 1561 time period. So how many people would be reading it, what his audience was like. And they had said it might have been, you know, like Inquirer, like, basically, a few years ago, ancient aliens talked about all sorts of stuff and then kind of misconstrued a fair amount of things. Like, a discovery based on archaeology was that little spacecraft that Giorgio wears.
Yeah.
And it, or he says it's a spacecraft, but the archaeologists believe it's a dragonfly. So there was interpretation differences, and they said there were other things found in that grouping that were natural. So that's why it would have belonged with this group. So not everything is aliens.
Unfortunately.
Both the extraterrestrial podcast or the ancient alien, they're both kind of a bingeable listen or watch on a sick day. One thing Emily and I wanted to do is to dedicate this show to my niece, Danny, who passed away in November, and who, along with Fox Mulder, wanted to believe. We thought that she would have enjoyed this episode with its ties to the aliens. She's the one who told us about the, what was it?
Area 52?
Yeah. Out in the boonies, out past Twilla, Utah. So that's where Emily and I went last summer and had a soda.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the picture on Instagram came from. We were sad at that loss, and we'll miss her.
Yep, for sure.
Okay, on to printmaking for a minute.
This is again from Tim Mara's Artist's Alphabet. Printmaking is a flexible medium. Its roots are in printing, which has always been at the forefront of technology. Printmaking is an accumulation of printing technologies from Caxton's hot new technology of wood block printing through wood engraving, copper engraving, etching, stone lithography, offset lithography, and screen printing, right through to laser and inkjet printing. All exist in the present for us. All have equal potential.
I wanted to mention that Hans produced prints between 1540 and 1572, and he was a block cutter, woodcut tinner, and he published in Nuremberg, Germany, publishing these broadsheets in which he illustrated the events. When Emily and I were talking about printing and wood engravings that were used in printing, it came up that stencils may have been used for laying down the color and tinting them. Or it could have been done with various engravings that they would have had to line up and run through the printer multiple times to lay down the blues and oranges and blacks that are seen in this celestial phenomenon illustration. You can see, especially in the smoke clouds on the bottom right or the towers of the cathedral on the left, that you can see where the blue doesn't line up entirely with the smoke, or it may have been laid down a couple of times. Even the column above the smoke is just a little off, which could happen if it was all running through at different times and having to be eyeballed and, you know, as securely as they could line it up. It's just a little off, or maybe some of the ink squished out. Daybreak in Nuremberg, Germany in 1561, we believe would have been between 4 and 5 a.m. So it would have been at the crack of dawn. And so I don't know how many people were up that early, but probably a fair amount.
Yeah. The citizens of Nuremberg watched as what was later pronounced as a celestial phenomenon unfolded on the early morning canvas of daybreak, strange colors and shapes moving seemingly with purpose. In the broadsheet printed about the event, this unusual traffic caught the city's attention and lasted for about an hour, and this unusual activity had no plausible explanation.
And I think the extraterrestrial podcast did a good job trying to figure out science. And I have a joke.
Okay,
what kind of currency do aliens use?
I don't know, what kind?
Starbucks.
Ah! Oh, good.
Okay, we can continue. In 1566, that'd be 5 years later, a celestial phenomenon happened over Basel, Switzerland. There is a flugbot of Basel 1566 by Samuel Apiarius and Samuel Cotius. This also showed fighting in the sky and unusual sunsets and sunrises. This is a quick description from Wikipedia. The other one that we gave was a translation from German to English. And this one is the text of the broadsheet, and it's translated. So the leaflet was written by Samuel Cochius, and it was reported as a religious event. That came from the Ulrich Majen, Ein UFO im Jahr 1561, PDF document, which is cited on the Wikipedia page. And during this time, it appears that a lot of leaflets were written about miracles and sky spectacles. So it's the Weibke Schwarte Nordichter S, and it looks like it was pages 88 through 99 about the sky spectacles.
In Switzerland, they speak French, German, Italian, and Romanish.
Oh, so it could have been translated from a number of things. Is it Latin-based and that French is? And that makes it easier to learn the two? I don't know.
I think French and Italian are Latin-based. I think, just a sec, I'll look. Sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt. I just was like, before we get too far, this is...
Yeah, that's okay.
The languages that are based in Latin are Italian and French from Switzerland.
May I read the leaflet written about Basil? It happened in 1566 three times, on 27 and 28 of July and on August 7. Against the sunrise and sunset, we saw strange shapes in the sky above Basel. During the year 1566, on the 27th of July, after the sun had shone warm on the clear, bright skies, and then around 9 p.m., it suddenly took a different shape and color. First, the sun lost all its radiance and luster, and it was no bigger than the full moon. And finally, it seemed to weep tears of blood, and the air behind him went dark. And he was seen by all the people of the city and countryside, in much the same way also the moon, which has already been almost full and has shone through the night, assuming an almost blood-red color in the sky. The next day, Sunday, the sun rose at about 6 o'clock and slept with the same appearance it had when it was lying before. He lit the houses, streets, and around as if everything was blood-red and fiery. At the dawn of August 7, we saw large black spheres coming and going, with great speed and precipitation, before the sun, and chattered as if they led a fight. Many of them were fiery red and soon crumbled and then extinguished. We have a little bit of news to cover with you. We're excited to announce that you can access the Whispering Gallery podcast on more than just Apple Podcasts. Look for the Whispering Gallery on CastBox, Deezer, Radio Public, and Spotify. We're set up so that Google Podcasts will find us when they update their listings. If you've been watching on Instagram, you'll have met our studio dogs. Emily's dogs are Wheatsy and Sai, both adopted as rescues. And my dogs are Boomer and Shotzi, also rescues. Emily and I live about 25 miles apart, so we've been bringing you our episodes through the free Skype service. We'll be finishing up this episode on the woodblock carved UFO series on January 27th. So we'll say Auf Wiedersehen until then. Take care. Bye-bye.